like mixing in quantum information.
Well, thank you all for being here. Today I want to present some of the recent research we have been doing in four-wave mixing and some of its application to quantum information. And this work was done at the Joint Quantum Institute, which is a joint research center between NIST and the University of Maryland. And it was done in conjunction with Raphael Pusser, Vincent Boyer, in the group of Paulette. So I want to concentrate in three main applications. The first one is the generation of entangled beams of light. Here I will describe the four-wave mixing process that we use and the entanglement criteria. And I should point out that we're, as opposed to the previous talks, we're not working at the single photon regime. We're actually working in the continuous variable regime. So we'll be looking at variables such as amplitude and phase, which have a, or quadratures of the light, which have a continuous range of values. After that, I'll give a brief overview of some results we have obtained on quantum cloning, and specifically cloning of entangled states. And finally, I will show some results we have obtained on a quantum buffer, and depending on time, I will describe the results on delay of EPR correlation and entangled images. So the process that we use, as I said, is four-wave mixing, and we work in a double lambda configuration in rubidium 85. So what we do is that we have a strong pump beam and a weak probe beam that we combine inside a rubidium cell at a side angle, and as a result of the four-wave mixing process, what we have is that the probe gets amplified and a new beam that we call the conjugate gets generated. And if we look at the energy level diagram, what we have is that in this process we're absorbing two pump photons and emitting a probe and a conjugate photon. And one of the properties of this process is that the probe and conjugate photons are always emitted in pairs. And it is this emission in pairs that will lead to the entanglement between the probe and the conjugate beams. And I should also point out that one of the advantages of using an atomic system for the four-wave mixing process is that we have a large gain even in a single-pass configuration, so we don't need to have a cavity around our medium. As a result, the medium can support a large number of spatial modes, and this has some impact in the generation of entangled beams with multi-spatial modes. So if we look at the transmission spectrum of the probe as we scan its frequency, we find the following transmission spectrum, where here we can identify a few different features. The first two are the dips here, which corresponds to the one photon absorption from F equal 3 to excited state, F equal 2 to excited state, this one here. But the important ones are these two gain peaks, which correspond to the time when we have four-wave mixing. And the first frequency here corresponds to the frequency of the probe, the second one to the frequency of the conjugate. And as I'll show, it's this gain that allows us to also do that quantum cloning and the quantum buffer with the four-wave mixing process. So as I mentioned before, one of the properties of the four-wave mixing process is that we always emit the two photons in pairs. As a result, we're going to have the same number of photons emitted into the probe and the conjugate. And this emission in pair leads to the to amplitude correlation between the two beams. So if we were to look at the amplitude, let's say, in phase space of the probe and the conjugate, what we would see correlations that have an ellipse, as shown here by the blue curve. And the quantum nature of this distribution is given by the fact that the uncertainty in the, in the distribution is smaller than the standard quantum limit along a given direction. And here the standard quantum limit is just a noise of a coherent state and corresponds to a transition between quantum and classical behavior. So in addition to the emission of photons in pairs, we have the energy conservation that requires the frequency of the probe plus the frequency of the conjugate to be equal twice the frequency of the pump. And this will lead to phase anticorrelation between the probe and the conjugate. Again, we have that the quantum nature of these correlations is given by the fact that we have the uncertainty in the distribution is less than the standard quantum limit along a given direction. So it then makes sense to introduce some joint quadratures, which are given along this direction, which is the amplitude difference, and along this direction, which is the phase sum. And as we will see, these are the variables that we will be measuring, and they allow us to characterize the entanglement and the properties of our beams. And I should just point out that we have defined this variable such that the noise for a coherent state or the standard quantum limit is equal to one for both of them. And one of the nice things about working with continuous variables is that there's some criteria that are easily verifiable experimentally that tells us whether we have entanglement or not. The first one is the inseparability criterion, and here we have that if the noise of the amplitude difference plus the noise of the phase sum is less than two, then this is a sufficient condition for the presence of continuous variable entanglement between the two beams. And what this is telling us is that if we have the uncertainty in the distribution is less than the standard quantum limit, for both the amplitude difference and the phase sum, then we know that we have continuous variable entanglement. The second one is, the second criterion is the EPR criterion, and this is a bit more stringent. And whenever we have EPR correlations, as you all know, we have that we can estimate the properties of one system to better than its standard quantum limit by making measurements on the other system. So in order to characterize this criterion, we need to look at conditional variables or conditional variances. And this we can estimate by making measurements of disjoint quadratures and also measurements of the individual beams. So in order to characterize and evaluate these criterions, we need to measure both amplitude and phase. And the way that we do this is by implementing a homodyne detection. I forgot to mention this, but one of the things that we have by using that four-way mixing process that I described is that the probe and the conjugate have about a 6 GHz difference in frequency. So in order to perform our measurements, we have to use two different homodyne detectors. And what we do is that we measure the probe with one homodyne detector, the conjugate with a second homodyne detector, and then look at the sum and difference signal of the two detections with two spectrum analyzers. And while we're doing these measurements, we scan the phase of the two local oscillators with piezoelectrons synchronously, such that we are always measuring the same quadrature in the two beams. So if we're measuring the X or amplitude quadrature for the probe, we're measuring the X or amplitude quadrature for the conjugate. So this way, as we scan the phase of the local oscillators, we can actually measure the joint quadratures that I introduced earlier. So as we scan the phase of the local oscillators, we get curves as the ones shown here. And what we have here is that due to the fact that we're scanning these things synchronously, what we have is that when we look at the noise of the difference signal given by the blue curve here, the minimum here represents the noise of the amplitude difference, while the minimum of the sum signal corresponds to the noise of the phase sum. And as we can see in this curve, the standard quantum limit is given here, so we are 4.3 dBs below the standard quantum limit. And what this tells us is that we have both inseparability and EPR correlations from the beams that are generated from the four-way mixing process. And something I should point out is that whenever we make this type of detection, whenever we do homodyne detections, we have that the local oscillator actually selects the shape of the beam that is being measured. As a result, we can actually shape the pattern or the shape of the local oscillator to analyze entanglement between different patterns in the probe and the conjugate. And I won't show this in this talk, but if someone's interested in this paper, we showed that by using the four-way mixing scheme, we can actually generate highly multispatial mode entangled beams, and we can generate entangled images by using this process. So now that I briefly described how we generate entanglement and the entanglement properties, I will move on to the quantum cloning. And as we all know, as a result of the no-cloning theorem, it is not possible to get a perfect copy of an arbitrary quantum state. However, it is possible to get an imperfect copy of a quantum state while still preserving some of its quantum properties. And it turns out that in the continuous variable regime, we can do a universal cloning machine by implementing a phase-insensitive amplifier and a beam splitter. So for the particular case of a 1-to-2 cloner, what we have is that we can have a phase-insensitive amplifier with a gain of 2, a 50-50 beam splitter. And in the case of a coherent state, what we get is we put in a coherent state with a given amplitude and phase. What we get out is two copies of this state with the same mean amplitude and phase. However, we're going to have some excess noise in both of these copies, and this is what leads to the imperfection in the copy of the initial state. So this excess noise actually comes from the amplification process, and as we saw on Tuesday from Girish Agarwal's talk, amplification always leads to excess noise. For the particular case of a phase-insensitive amplifier, we have that if we look at the case of a coherent state again, we have that the signal, the amplitude of the field, gets scaled by a factor of the square root of g, while the noise gets scaled by a factor of 2g minus 1. So if we now look at the noise figure, which is given by the signal-to-noise ratio output over the signal-to-noise ratio of the input, we get the following expression. And as we can see here, when we go to large gains, we see that the signal-to-noise ratio of the output is degraded by a factor of 1/2 with respect to the signal-to-noise ratio of the input. And this is the well-known 3 dB penalty from optical amplification. So what we did is that, okay, so it turns out that the configuration that I showed for the four-way mixing is actually in a phase-insensitive amplifier. So what we did is to characterize the noise properties of our system as a phase-insensitive amplifier. So in order to do this, what we did was to take the laser beam, apply a modulation to the beam, and consider that to be our signal. So this signal can be either at the frequency of the probe or the conjugate, either one works. And what we did was to analyze the signal-to-noise ratio of the input and the output right after amplification. So without going into much detail, what we found is that we can operate close to the ideal limit, which is given by this equation and is shown here by that blue curve, over a given range of different gains. And it's particularly important to notice that we're able to do that even at low gains, and that's typically where we operate at when we're working in the quantum regime. So before showing our results, I should mention that there has been some recent work on quantum cloning in continuous variable. There was this work where they were able to do an experiment on cloning of a coherent state by using linear optics and feed forward. And there was also recently a theoretical paper where they introduced the term of local e-cloner. And what they mean here is the cloning of one of the modes of an entangled state, for example, the probe or the conjugate in our case. And it is this cloning device that we are implementing in our experiment. So what we do in our experiment is that we have a first cell that we use to generate the entangled beams. After that, we take the probe and use a homodyne detection to measure it. And we take the conjugate and the pump and image it to a second cell that serves as a phase-in sensitive amplifier for the conjugate generating the first cell. After the amplification, we have a variable attenuator, and this variable attenuator serves the role of the beam splitter in the cloning device. So what we do is that we set the product of the gain of the amplification and the attenuation of the product to be always equal to one. So this way we can analyze the cloning operation for a number of different gains, not just a particular value of gain like a 1-2 cloner. So by doing this type of experiment, what we found is that here we can see that EPR given by the red curve here, the red dots, and we lose EPR whenever we cross one, so we lose EPR at a gain of about 1.2 or 1.3. However, the inseparable criterion given by the blue curve here is not lost until a gain of 3, which means that when we're operating at a gain of 2, we're operating at the regime of a 1-2 cloner, so we're able to clone one of the modes of an entangled state while still such that the two clones that come out are entangled with the input state, with the other input state. So in this particular case, we're cloning the conjugate, and we have two copies of the conjugate, and both of those copies are entangled with the original probe from the four-way mixing process. So then now I want to move on to the final portion of the talk, which is in quantum buffers. And here, the main reason why we want to have a quantum buffer is that a lot of quantum protocols require the distribution of entanglement. So it is necessary to control the propagation velocity of this quantum resource. And as we saw this morning, whenever we want to distribute entanglement, there is a limit in the distance over which we can do this due to losses. And a way around it is to implement a quantum repeater. And here, of course, as we have seen in a few talks, we need to have some way to control or store the entangled photons in order for the quantum repeater to operate properly. And so we need to control the propagation velocity of the quantum resources, and we need to have a delay line, and ideally we want to have a quantum memory that can store the entangled particles for however long we need them. And since most experiments use light to transfer entanglement, what we need to do is to have a means of controlling the propagation velocity of light while still maintaining its quantum properties. So it turns out that we can do this by using the dispersion properties of a medium. And whenever we have a large peak in the transmission spectrum of a medium, this is results in a large dispersion along a given frequency region. And this dispersion in results gives us a large group index. And this large group index leads to a low group velocity. So we can then control the propagation velocity of light in the medium by controlling the slope of the dispersion in a given medium. So as I showed at the beginning, the four-way mixing process has a sharp gain feature. So we can use this sharp gain feature in order to control the propagation velocity of light by changing the properties of the four-way mixing. So again, there has been some previous experiments that have worked in the continuous variable regime for delay of quantum states. These are some of them, and they have delayed quantum states such as quick states of light by using EIT. Here we go a bit farther and actually delay one of the entangled beams of an entangled pair of beams. And again, we use four-way mixing to generate our entangled states of light. We now take the conjugate and measure with a local, with a double balanced homodyne detection. And we then image the probe and the pump to a second cell. And this cell now serves as the slow light medium for the probe beam. After that, we measured the probe beam with a second homodyne detection. And again, we characterized entanglement by measuring the double balanced homodyne detection scheme that I described before. And for this particular experiment, we characterized the delay that is introduced by the second cell by measuring the cross correlation between the signal that arrives at this detector and at this detector. And I should point out that in a scheme like this, due to the fact that the four-way mixing is also an amplifier, as I showed before, is the excess noise from the amplification that is actually going to lead to the loss of correlation between the delayed probe and the original conjugate. So that's going to be the main limiting factor of using a scheme like four-wave mixing in order to delay entanglement. So I'll briefly show some of the results that we obtained. As I said, we, in order to control the propagation velocity, what we need to do is to change the slope of the dispersion in the medium. And this can be done by changing either the temperature of the pump power that is used for the four-wave mixing process. So in order to get a reference that we can compare our measurements again, what we do is that we first take data at room temperature such that there's no four-wave mixing going in that second slow light cell. And what we found here is that we were able to get a reduction below the standard quantum limits of the amplitude difference and the phase sum noise of about 4 dBs, and that tells us that we have both EPR and inseparability in our beams. And the time cross-correlation function that we measure, we take as the reference signal for the next measurements that we do. We then increase the temperature of the cell to the point where we have about 3 dBs of noise reduction left. We still have both EPR and inseparability. And as we can see with this red curve here, we have been able to obtain a delay of about 22 nanoseconds when we do this. And whenever we do this type of experiment, an important figure of merit is what's called a fractional delay. So if we were thinking of pulses, it would correspond to the delay that we have. So if we have two pulses, it corresponds to the delay that we have with respect to the pulse width. So ideally, we want to be able to separate the pulses and have a fractional delay of the order of one. And by doing this type of measurements, we estimate that for EPR correlations, we can get a fractional delay of about 0.52. We're still not at the level of one that we would want, but it's getting there. And if we continue to increase the temperature, we have to a point where we lose all the noise reduction and we have almost no squeezing left. Here, of course, we've lost the EPR, and we have still some inseparability left. And we can estimate that we have an inseparability with a fractional delay of about 0.6. So just in order to show that we can also use the pump power in order to tune the delay, what we did was that we blocked and unblocked the pump beam and repeated some of these measurements. And what we found is that the delay was gone, as shown by this blue curve, whenever we blocked the beam. And we were able to recover the original amount of squeezing. So finally, one of the properties of the four-wave mixing, as I said, is that we don't need to have a cavity around it. So the process can actually support a large number of spatial modes. And all of these spatial modes are going to be delayed simultaneously. So we took advantage of this property to delay an entangled image. So here we have the image of the probe and the conjugate, and it's supposed to be an H-bar. So what we found when we repeat the same type of experiments as the ones I just described is that we were able to delay the probe with respect to the conjugate by about 27 nanoseconds before we start losing the entanglement, and this gives us a fractional delay of about 0.45. So to conclude, I have shown that it's possible to use four-wave mixing for a number of different applications in quantum information in the continuous variable regime. So I have shown that we can generate highly entangled twin beams or entangled beams, and that this, I haven't shown this, but we have shown it that it's possible to have multispatial mode beams. So it is possible to have a lot of information in these beams because of the high degree of freedom given by the spatial modes. The other thing I showed is that it is possible to use the four-wave mixing as a low noise insensitive amplifier, which allows us to do quantum cloning of quantum states. Finally, I've shown that it is possible to use the four-wave mixing also to delay entanglement. And due to the fact that the process conserves the spatial correlations, we can also delay entangled images. Thank you for your attention.